Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Jay Mintzmyer of Value Investor's Edge. Jay first began contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2011, building up a large following through his work covering shipping stocks, probably about as comprehensively as they're covered anywhere online or in print. Since 2015, Jay has run the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. The service offers intensive coverage of deep value opportunities in the shipping, energy, MLP, and industrial sectors. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's M-I-N-T-Z-M-Y-E-R, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Jay Mintzmyer.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon if you're joining us from Europe. We're now starting another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live, recording about 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the 12th of November, 2020. Today, we're hosting the CFO of Danaos Corp, Evangelos Chatzis, who will talk to us about the container ship markets, as well as Danaos' role in transitioning their charter book and rolling through the massive container ship recovery. And we'll talk a little bit about the differences between the Panamax segments and larger vessels and some of the impacts we're seeing there. Evangelos, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jay, and good morning or good afternoon to everyone.
Excellent. Just before we begin, some disclosures. I do have a long position in Danaos Corp. This is being recorded on November 12th. So if you're listening to recording at a later date, just keep in mind that's of the 12th of November. Nothing you hear today constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations in any form. So Evangelos, first question for you. What are some of the near-term drivers of this container ship market strength? It's been longer lasting than I think, at least more longer lasting than I expected. And then what are some of the longer term things that you're focused on as a company?
Yes, thank you for the question. Indeed, the container market is seeing very good days. We've seen a big increase in volumes of boxes transported over the past 6 weeks or so. And this is largely the result of restocking after a prolonged period where Asia was locked down to start with. And then you had Europe and the US in lockdown measures. So obviously there needed to be some restocking. Actual consumption is also up. It seems that people have disposable income that is not being spent on vacations or going out to restaurants, I guess. And they're spending it by, you know, they're staying home and ordering stuff. So that has also improved the metrics for goods transported. You have Christmas season coming up. So there's a lot of ordering for that. And in general, we're seeing ships that are full to capacity. The idle fleet of container ships is effectively down to very low levels. All the ships are utilized. As a result, charter rates have gone up and so on and so forth. We believe that the strength demonstrated at this point is going to last. And maybe we're going to have some corrections along the way due to seasonality and what have you. But we believe the fundamentals are there to have a good run for the next 2 to 3 years, actually. So we're optimistic for the medium term. Mainly because of supply side health, if you will. The order book is very low. For the first time, as far as I can remember, it's below 8% of the existing fleet, so we don't expect many ships hitting the water over the next period. Orders haven't been placed for the last couple of years, and we don't expect orders to be placed anytime soon. New building prices versus secondhand prices have a big gap, and there is no economic justification for ordering new ships. And at the same time, there are technical obsolescence concerns with all the new propulsion systems that are being reviewed at this point to conform with emissions regulations. And generally, people are not willing to go out on a limb and order expensive assets that they may find out a few years down the road that they're not fit for trading. So all that combined with the fact that we expect ships to slow steam even more than the speeds they're doing today, because that's the only way at this point to reduce emissions, paints a picture whereby supply is really tight. Demand is going to grow. We know that for sure. We just don't know by how much. And therefore, we expect continued strength in the market fundamentals. And it's a good place to be because we haven't been able to convey such a positive story for a number of years now.
Yeah, we certainly hope that'll continue. And of course, as you mentioned, the order book in container ships for the larger sizes especially was very large for many, many years. So it's encouraging to see that start to be absorbed into the fleet and still see those strong rates. You mentioned there's a disconnect between kind of like the secondhand prices of vessels, especially maybe in the midsize segments and in those new build prices, right? Theoretical new build prices, because we haven't really seen any. Is there a chance to exploit some of that and acquire some more vessels? I know you bought a couple 9,000 TEU ships. Is there more potential for that, or is Danaos Corp kind of done buying ships?
Well, I mean, we've bought over the past year or so, we've bought six ships, right? And in the 8,500 to 9,000 TEU range, exactly because of that. I mean, the latest acquisitions that you just mentioned, we're going to take delivery of those ships within the next couple of months. We bought them for $31 million each, and the corresponding new building is going to cost you $80 to $90 million. And these are not inflated, if you will, prices offered by shipyards. This is pretty close to cost, so there's not much more down that, you know, that this can go. And the earnings of a secondhand, 10-year-old secondhand ship like the ones we acquired are not that different from what a new building would get. Therefore, hands down, you know, there's no way a new building would make sense economically. What will need to happen is ultimately, as charter rates continue to be strong, asset prices will appreciate as they already are appreciating. And at some point, it's going to start making sense building a new ship. We're not there yet. Assets are going up. We did also mention in our recent earnings call that we're not willing to chase the market up. I'm not ruling out further investments, but they would have to be at decent prices. And we're always on the lookout for new opportunities.
Yeah, it sounds like there's kind of a two-part. So first of all, there's these attractive secondhand ships, which you said you acquired six of them this year. And then secondly, once you're done buying ships, which it sounds like you're taking a pause at this point, you can expect those values to start to rise a little bit if the market remains strong. And of course, that would translate into a higher NAV per share, which I believe you disclosed, I think, in your recent presentation. Correct me if I'm wrong, you said it was 20 or 21 was your estimate for adjusted NAV.
$20, yes. And this has not taken into account the recent surge in values. We haven't, we haven't gotten refreshed valuations from brokers, but yes, you're right. Asset values are going up. These ships we've bought, they've already gone up by $4 or $5 million each.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Is there any chance you can disclose any further details on those 9K TEUs? I mean, they have a charter that came with them. Is that charter near market rates, or was it below market, or any sort of updates on that charter?
There is a charter at $23,000 a day, and it's for 2 years. So these ships produce around $6 million of EBITDA. So it's 12 million on a $62 million investment, which is not bad.
Yeah, of course. And then the hope would be that, you know, when those charters run out, hopefully the market is still balanced. And of course, you could probably get an even better rate. That'll be our fingers crossed, and we'll hope that happens. So, I mean, you're in a very good position now. I mean, interest rates are rock bottom. Charter rates are improving. You're mentioning how the NAVs are increasing. Is there any, I guess, kind of a two-part question. One, is there any way to lock in those lower cost interest rates? Are you going to continue a variable policy? And two, once you've locked in those lower cost interest rates, what do you see as like your necessary liquidity balance? Like, is there room to go buy ships or repurchase shares or pay a dividend? Or do we need to play defense for a couple of years?
So on interest rates, you always have the chance to hedge, right? But hedging always comes with a cost. It's an expensive exercise. And given that for the next couple of years, we don't expect interest rates to go anywhere, I think the best option is continue doing what we're doing, which is remaining variable. In any case, with all of the fleet that we are, so we have a balanced fleet at this point in terms of charter coverage. Half of the fleet is earning fixed contracted revenues. The other half is going to soon take benefit of the upside and the improvement in charter rates. So we view this as a natural hedge, among other things, right? So even if interest rates go up, if this is in a booming market, which one would expect it to be, that's okay. However, at this point, we don't think that we should fix rates yet. Now, on your question in relation to free cash flow and uses of capital and so on and so forth, yes, we are producing a very healthy cash flow. We just reported EBITDA of $82 million for Q3. This is going to, by definition, increase in the coming quarters as the new ships start producing EBITDA. We have even more upside when the increased recharterings for our spot fleet start to show up on our earnings. So, you know, obviously, we're going to be running at a rate of an annualized rate north of 350 odd million of EBITDA. And then, as you said, debt service costs are down. So we're talking about well north of 220, 30 million of operating cash flow post inter-service. We're still going to utilize a good chunk of the cash flow we produce to amortize debt and deliver the company further. We will review investment opportunities, you know, reinvest in the business, but they're going to have to be good deals that make sense. And obviously, all these capital allocation decisions are continuously reviewed by the management and the board. We recently bought back 17.5% of outstanding shares in a buyback, which proved to be a well-timed decision. And we did so without affecting the trading liquidity of the stock. We bought it in privately negotiated transactions with people that were not trading the shares. So, we will continuously evaluate ways to improve and deliver value to our shareholders, either through shareholder distributions or through investing in the business.
Yeah, I think that repurchase that you did was just phenomenal. I mean, you bought the shares. Obviously, you don't want to buy the shares from the insider, the private equity or banks or whatnot that sold the shares, and then gloat about what a great deal it was. But you know, that maybe wouldn't be good form, right? But I mean, you bought shares back at 35-40% of net asset value into a recovering market. I mean, it was a phenomenal deal. So with that said, there's a few more shares out there. There's another million or so that's part of Sphinx, the kind of holding company that owns a million shares. And then there's the HSH shares that are legacy, right, from the refinancing a few years back. And my understanding is those have now been transferred. Cerberus bought out HSH's profile. Is there any sort of thoughts about those shares? Are those shares potentially up for sale at a similar price? Or are those shares, do those investors see themselves, do you think, long term?
Look, obviously, these are candidates for us to approach if we consider another buyback. At this point, I don't think it's our intention to pursue something like that for the time being. And I cannot tell you whether these guys want to hold on to the shares or sell them. But at this point, we wouldn't have an interest.
When you did the initial repurchase, one of the parties, Sphinx Investment, linked to George Economou, sold part of his shares, but not all of them. Was that due to a personal decision on that owner's behalf, or was that a limitation on the NAOS in terms of like how much he wanted to spend on repurchases?
No, it was a personal decision of the shareholder.
Okay, just curious to know that. I think you and I spoke a few months back, and you know, the container ship market had already been recovering, but it hadn't been quite as impressive as it is today. And you mentioned, I believe you said something around 50 million. Of free cash is kind of like your annual estimate for like how much you have for maybe it's vessel purchases, maybe it's dividends, maybe it's purchases. Is that still a reasonable figure for folks to think about, like around 50 million, or is that changed at all?
We do disclose in our corporate presentation, which is available on our website, the free cash flow produced over the last 12 months. And that's a hard number. So that's 66 million. And we expect to do better than that in the coming months. I don't have exact numbers, nor do we give such guidance, but I think what you see today is a good guide of what will be there tomorrow.
Yeah, certainly impressive number. And yeah, I might have rounded down to, I think 50 was just a number that I felt comfortable with. You might have said 66 before, but yeah, the point being that, you know, you had 66 or whatever, what have you, and you bought a couple vessels that you're going to finance, and then you've done the repurchase. But as we enter 2021, how do we start thinking about that dividend? Because I know a year ago, before COVID, there was the very optimistic talk about a dividend in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have received a lot of questions about this, and the answer is quite simple. The board was seriously considering a dividend a year ago, just before COVID broke out. As soon as this happened, obviously, we had to go back to the drawing board. It's not in the cards for the near term, or at least until the cloud of the pandemic goes away. The board views this as a very serious decision. It's a commitment to distribute a quarterly dividend. It's something we take seriously. It's not something that we're going to put out and then take it back after a couple of quarters if something happens. So this is something that, you know, will be in the cards when some sort of normality is reestablished. In the interim, we're being cautious and opportunistic. We're not allergic to the idea of, you know, paying back value to shareholders, hence the buyback that we did, which was three times the buyback that we had originally announced to do. And so I think we have already gone a long way towards demonstrating to the market that we are very mindful of capital allocation decisions. And in that context, you know, I don't think people should expect a dividend in the near term.
Makes sense to wait for a little bit more clarity and make sure it's something you can commit to for the long term. If we get to that point, ideally we get there sooner than later, but of course we don't know. There was some good vaccine news out on Monday and Tuesday. We're still waiting for some of the other trials. I think most folks, even the most optimistic, sort of say, you know, mid to late 2021 is when things might be returned to normality. What sort of payout structure? Would that be a fixed dividend then? None of the weird variable stuff? And would that be based on, you know, some sort of like percentage of free cash flow? Or how would you think about that? Just so investors can kind of think about it as well.
You know, I cannot foretell how the board is going to think about it. But, you know, the thinking so far as a concept would be to put out a fixed dividend that we would seek to grow. So we want to start out with a dividend that, and then deliver growth of that dividend as time progresses. And it would have to be at a reasonable yield. So, you know, you cannot pay out a 20% yield, right? You're going to have to start out with a dividend that makes sense, and then start growing it as the company grows and as the numbers allow for it.
Yeah, I think it certainly depends on what your share price is, because I think if your share price would be, you know, close to NAV, which is, you know, $20 and going up, then, you know, maybe you have 7 or 8% on that. Mm-hmm. And that's a very good dividend, right? I mean, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself with math in public, but, you know, using round numbers, you know, 10% at 20 would be $2, right? 5% at 20 would still be $1 a year, right? You know, hopefully, right, the shares are closer now, so it makes more sense.
And the dollar a year, given the cash flow we're producing, is less than a third, right? So, and maybe it's closer to a quarter when numbers improve next year. Of free cash flow, I mean, right?
Right. I think it's important to remember is that, you know, even with $66 million, which, as you mentioned, is definitely increasing, theoretically, right, you're not going to pay all that out as a dividend. I mean, we're talking $3 or more in terms of that free cash flow per share. Is that about right?
Yes, correct. It's 20.4 million share count after the buyback. Correct.
Yeah, so we're talking significant free cash flow per share, and I think with this weird market that we've had, where your shares were trading, I mean, they were at $5-6 just a couple months ago.
I know, and you know, not only is it a significant number, but it's also a number that is not due to the good market right now, right? This is a number which is going to be there consistently for the next few years. If you look at the contract coverage that we have, it's at 81% for next year and 60% for 2022. So this is a company that produces steady cash flows on the back of solid contracts. And obviously, we're going to take advantage of the upside that the spot market will offer us at this point with all the openings that we have over the next 4 or 5 months. But again, these are not some inflated numbers because the market right now is good, right? I want to make the point that this is a steady state situation due to the high contract coverage that we have.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, with containers improving, there's kind of two arguments to make. One argument is that as contracts roll over, they're going to be improving. And I think you benefit from that with your Panamax ships. But I don't think with the Neos Corp, you know, 80 or 90% of your benefit is in the fact that your counterparties are getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And there's a lot less of a risk on that charter book. I think maybe in March or April. Yeah, it may be in March or April, people looked at your charter book and they didn't believe it. Right. They said there's risk here. And I think that your benefit there is significantly improved. You know, what about the Gemini JV? I mean, you launched that, you bought a few ships. Is that kind of done, or do you think you might do some more stuff with the Gemini?
I think it's done. You know, right now, all the growth that we want to do it within the public company, which is Danaos Corp. And Gemini was set up in 2015 for different reasons. They've acquired 5 ships in total, and I don't think there's much more to come on that end. We want to focus delivering value to Danaos Corp. That's our focus.
Right. If you can have 100% of the ship, why not have all of it, right? So, you know, one of the questions I had for you in terms of your Panamax ships, because all the larger ships are basically fixed, right? They're not really changing. But the midsize and smaller ships, the feeders and the Panamaxes, there's significant numbers of vessels, basically 20 vessels or so, that are going to roll over in the next few months. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How far ahead are those negotiations? Are those basically just a few weeks before the expiration, or can we expect stuff to be done several months in advance? And secondly, two parts, how much duration can we get? All right, is there going to be 2 or 3 year charters, or are these all going to be like 6, 8, 10 month type deals?
So we have ships on charters at, $9,000, $10,000, $11,000 a day, which are which were booked during the softening of the market during the pandemic. These now are rolling off. We've already rechartered a few ships. The majority of them are rolling off from Q1 onwards because of options that charterers had to keep the ships for an extra 3, 4, or 5 months from where we are today. And all of this, we have a pretty analytical disclosure of our charter book in our SEC filings. So people who are interested and want to do the math can access it within our 6K. There is a very analytical table depicting exactly when things open up and all that. Yes, we've already fixed a few ships. The majority of them are coming off charter, sort of February, March, April framework. And we expect the market is going to hold up until then, and we'll be able to get much better rechartering rates.
Yeah, the bar is pretty low for getting better recharter rates, right? Because most of those deals were done in the weaker parts of the market. And those options are, I would say, unfortunate. But then at the same time, you managed to get basically 100% utilization, right, during the worst
Correct.
Of the market. So
Correct.
It's a trade-off. I mean, in hindsight, like maybe, it would be nicer to roll them all today, but we certainly understand. How many ships do you think, I know it's just an estimate, this isn't official forward guidance or anything like that, but how many ships do you think are going to be rechartered during Q4? I know you said a lot of them are Q1. Is there only like 5 or 6 ships during Q4? Is it like 10?
Yes, I think it's 5 or 6 ships. I mean, we're done with Q4 rechartering's, we don't expect any other ships to be redelivered before the latest redelivery date. We've rechartered Panamaxes. You also asked me about periods. Panamax is for 18 months at 20,000 a day. If you go shorter, you can get an even better rate. I don't think you can, at this point, one would expect that, tenors would go up. We don't see that. Still, there is uncertainty in the system, although things are looking up and the vaccine is doing progress and all these things. I don't think people will want to lock in for periods of more than 2 or 3 years at this point.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's a lot of uncertainty. But, you mentioned 18 months at $20,000 a day. And of course, that ship, I don't know exactly what that ship was on before, but most of those are what, 8,000 right now that you have on historically?
Most of the Panamaxes are, as I said, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a day. These are the distressed pandemic period levels. So sort of between March and June, whatever was rechartered then, was pretty low. So what you see on our EBITDA for Q3, for example, the 283 odd million is, includes these low rates. It gives you some sort of measure on how better things can get.
Certainly. And I guess if you're doing math at home or we'll have this recording posted later as well. Think about the fact that, you have 15 ships and they're going from maybe $10,000. That's even optimistic, going from 10,000 to maybe 20,000. Just do that math at home and you can see, pull the calculator out, 15 times 365 times 10,000 delta, and you can see that your free cash flow theoretically almost doubles, right? Just from those Panamaxes coming off.
We're not giving guidance, and I don't want to make a prediction on where we will recharter these ships, but definitely, your math is in the right direction. You just have to know what the differential is going to be, whether it's 5, 6, or 10,000. I don't know. I hope it's even more than that, but I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah, I bring it up because there's a slide in your presentation that you have, and it shows your backlog, right? And it shows the charters, and it shows that, most of your backlog, of course, is on the larger ships, right? And most of your spot exposure is on the smaller ships. And it shows, I think it shows like a breakdown by revenue, and it shows, revenue from the Panamaxes is only, 3% or whatnot, right? But my point being is, it's only 3% of revenue, but if those charters roll over, I mean, we're talking a massive lever in terms of free cash flow, right? I mean, and that's
exactly
it's like that marginal gain that maybe folks don't realize because you only have 20 million shares outstanding.
It's 3% exactly because these ships are currently running at very low rates, right?
Yeah, it's just a testament, and this is all shipping companies, not just in EOS Corp, but it's just a testament. There's this huge fixed cost base, right? But once you break even and once you're in that profitable zone, every penny or every dollar that goes to revenue basically goes to free cash flow. And it's just incredible, you know, economies of scale and I guess operational leverage, and you guys have financial leverage. My recommendation, I don't want to, you know, preach at you or anything. You're doing a good job, of course. But with that hedging of those loans, I think a lot of folks look at your loan book and the high leverage, and they get a little nervous about the fact that none of that is locked in. Is there any chance in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, you might consider maybe a 3 or 4 year type swap on those interest rates?
We're not ruling it out. This is something that managing risks on the liability side of the business is very much on our minds. We're continuously evaluating. It's just that at this point, we think that it's not time to fix. Doesn't mean that we're not considering it. Doesn't mean that we're not very thoughtful of it. And, we'll see what happens.
All right. I know that's probably as much as you can actually say, is that we'll see what happens. But just a note, because I know a lot of folks are risk averse and they don't like the fact that all that debt's floating when LIBOR is basically zero, right? Any other near-term focus items or risks that you're looking at in the market? What should investors be considering in terms of like the risk?
Well, at this point, you have, as you mentioned, our customers are reporting record earnings, so counterparty risk is significantly mitigated, if you will, and that's a very important thing for us because of our long-term contracts. So I don't see any short-term risks, to be honest with you. Things are looking up, and we expect them to keep looking up for quite some time. One risk may be some sort of mutation of the virus that no one is expecting, but I'm going to leave this out of the discussion. We're not doctors. On a macro level, what concerns the industry, I'd say, and this is not just for containers, is the environmental emissions aspect and all these things, development of new propulsion technologies, reduction of emissions. So that's something which has been on the back burner because of COVID, of course, but it will now surface again. And we as a company, we're at the forefront of managing this and doing research on this. And this is something which I think will become more and more relevant as we move away from the singular focus on COVID.
Yeah, obviously it'd be good to move forward and be able to focus just on the actual supply demand of the market. And not, like you said, we're not doctors, and to be able to move away from the pandemic. Evangelos, thank you for joining us today. I think we got some good information from you, and we're going to look forward to, you know, continuing improving results in the future. And we'll keep our fingers crossed for a strong Q1 and hope for the best rolls. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Stay safe and stay healthy.
This concludes another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live. We just hosted the CFO of Danaos Corp, Evangelos Chatzis. He was here today to talk with us about the container ship markets and the current strategy for Danaos as they recently concluded a repurchase and are looking at rolling over some of their mid-sized tonnage into new charters into Q1. As a disclosure, I have a long position in Danaos Corp, and nothing you heard today constitutes investment advice or company guidance in any form. This is being recorded on the morning of 12 November 2020, so keep that in mind if you're listening at a later date.
If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. Jay Mintzmyer runs the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for Value Investor's Edge there.